of you teachers, all of you educators. And we know that sometimes when you come to a new place like this, you don't want to stand up and be recognized. So we're not going to make you stand up, but we do want to honor you as legends. And we're talking about teachers. We're talking about substitute teachers, administrators. We're talking about the aides, the bus drivers, the lunch lady. We're talking about everybody that helps to educate and to teach our kids. So one more time, BFC, can we give honor to all the teachers? Yay. We really, really appreciate what you do. And in just a moment, you're going to hear from the panel. And we're just going to have a little chit-chat and just talk about some of the things teachers deal with. And then how can we as a church support you, educators, you teachers? How can we pray for you and be a blessing to you once the school year kicks back in next fall? How many of you teachers are ready to wrap up this school year? So I want to just share one verse with you, and then throughout our time together, we're going to ask some questions, and you'll see on the screen they'll put up some funny memes that all of you teachers and educators will appreciate, I'm sure. But the verse in Romans 13:7, it says, "Give to everyone what you owe. If you owe taxes, pay taxes. If revenue, then revenue. If respect, then respect. If honor, then honor." And that is the whole point of what we're doing today. Give to everybody what is due them, and you are due honor, and you are due respect. And we know you don't always get it. Often you don't get it. And then every now and then something great happens, a great testimony from a former student or something, and you feel like, yes, it was worth it. Well, today we hope you feel that way and feel like what you're doing matters and that you matter. Here's a meme. This is something you maybe can relate to. It's what people think you do. Public school teachers, what my friends think I do, what my parents think I do, what students think I do, what society thinks I do, what I think I do, and what I really do. So you can probably relate to all of those. So I'm going to have these guys here introduce themselves, and then we're just going to talk about some things that hopefully will encourage you in what you do. All right? So let's start here. Go ahead, Josh.
I am Josh Bartz, and I teach the high school band program at Portage Northern, along with some digital media design and some music history and theory.
I'm Katie Johnson. I taught in the public school system for about 16 years. I taught first, second, third, sixth, and seventh grade for a little while. Not all at the same time. Praise the Lord. But recently I came on staff here at VFC as the preschool director and also the director of Valley Kids Learning Center.
My name is Brittany Parker. I am the pre-K teacher at Parkwood Upjohn Elementary School.
And I am Becky Moon. I taught 9th and 10th grade English for 13 years at Portage Northern High School. And for the last 3 years, I've been a school counselor at West Middle School in Portage.
My name is Kelsey Putman. I teach at Millwood Elementary for Kalamazoo Public Schools. I've taught 5th grade, 4th grade, 2nd grade, and now I'm at kindergarten.
Good morning. My name is Tony Moon. I've been teaching for 25 years. I did 12 years at Portage North Middle School doing 8th grade U.S. history. 12 years at Northern High School doing Ancient World and 20th Century World History and Theory of Knowledge, which was a great class. And then I'm now at Portage West Middle School.
All right, so let's give these guys a hand. Okay. So let's talk about, a couple of you guys just describe it to set the scene here. Describe a day in the life of a teacher. Like, you get up, and then what? Somebody go. What's your day like?
Want me to go?
Sure.
All right. So I am in the building at about 7 to get a little quiet time before the kids get there. So we usually get there 5 of or so. And then I teach straight through. My schedule is a little unusual in that I teach 6 classes back to back. So I teach my music theory class first and then my digital media design. And then I go into my top band. And then I have a seminar class, which is guided study hall. And then I teach 2 more bands back-to-back, and then finally can take my lunch at about 1:15. And then usually about an hour of planning there. About 3 o'clock, the meetings start, usually with a parent or administrator or whatever that might look like. Those usually wrap up around 4:30. I swing home, get the kids, and I'm usually back at work between 5:30, 6 o'clock, somewhere in there, a couple of nights a week for concerts, meetings, et cetera. So it's pretty exciting.
Busy day, busy week.
Yes.
Now, how do you people eat and go to the restroom?
We don't.
You don't.
That's what I was going to say. You know, get up about 5, 5:30, have to, you know, fill my tank, because once you get to school at 7 or whatever, you're on the whole day. And it's 3 o'clock, you didn't drink any water, you didn't go to the bathroom, forgot to eat lunch. It's like, okay, all right. But, you know, it's just, you're always on, and it's a lot of fun. When I taught school for 13 years as an English teacher, that was then. Now as a counselor, you know, I get to school about 7, and I have this long to-do list of all these things, and then chaos ensues, or, you know, somebody's broke up with their boyfriend or girlfriend's crying in my office, and it's, you know, you never know what to expect, so every day is a new adventure.
That's awesome. We're going to come back and talk a little bit later just about some things that you're seeing as a counselor, Becky, with the students, and then some advice you can give to all of us parents and to teachers and educators as well. Somebody else here, let's talk about what are the most fulfilling things, some of the most fulfilling things you've experienced. You know, you have these crazy days, packed out, and yet there's fulfillment. You see good fruit eventually, right? They're looking. Who's got that testimony?
I guess for me as a pre-K teacher, a lot of the students come in the beginning of the year, they're freaked out and their parents are freaked out because they've never been away from them. And so what is really encouraging for me is to see how they grow from being scared to even come in the door to being happy and excited to come to school. And their parents are talking about how much they love school, and they are mad when it's the weekend and they're like, there's no school today, you know. So that's like really encouraging for me. It's great for me to see their growth. It's a huge amount in little ones.
I would say to piggyback off of that is, as a kindergarten teacher, when they start to not need you as much, I know that sounds really weird, but, at the beginning of the year, it's like, I need my milk opened. I need my shoe tied, even though you just tied it. And, when they can start doing some of those things without you, that's what's really, fulfilling is, and even when they can solve their own problems, you know, you have a student that comes up and it's like, so-and-so poked me, but I'm gonna try to solve my problem first and then I'll come back to you. You know, so those are things that you just, it's like, you go, power on.
That is actually cool, though. You guys see the progress during the school year. That's good. Now, what about some of the biggest challenges? This is a two-part question. What do you think some of the biggest challenges are that teachers face? Because, you know, I've talked to many of you, and we have other folks that are friends of ours that teach. Oh, you guys are laughing at the memes. That's what it is. That face. And we know that the whole, you know, world of students has changed a lot over the years. I want you guys to talk about it. So first, what are some of the challenges you guys think students are facing? And then we'll talk about what are the challenges teachers are facing.
For students, there's this overwhelming fear of missing out. And I think the thing that is so hard to watch as a teacher is that they're willing to sacrifice almost everything, whether that's the curriculum or engagement in class or any of that, because they're so fearful of missing out on something that's going on social media or something cool that someone else is doing or a trend or a whatever. And they're willing to compromise almost anything in order to fulfill that fear of missing out. In our house, we kind of joke about it as FOMO, the fear of missing out. And it's scary as a teacher to see what kids will compromise in order to scratch that itch. It's really, really terrifying.
How many of you parents also have seen that with your young people? There is this FOMO thing. And so, like you say, they sacrifice really important things for that short term. Anybody out there seen that amongst the young people these days? It's a lot different than it was when some of us were growing up. What about you, Tony? What would you say?
I think one of the biggest challenges I see my students face is just, and it's also a cultural thing too, I think, within where we live, is just this idea of finishing what you start and being a little gritty when things get hard. And not giving up too soon. I know we live in such a technological culture where we get instantaneous answers in like 2 seconds. And so we just expect that if we can't get it that fast, then, well, I'm just not good at it. I'm going to stop. And to get people to just finish it, work it through, it's okay to get it wrong because you learn so much more from that sometimes than anything else. So it's just fighting to get people to be persistent, to be gritty. You know?
That's good. Awesome. Do you want to say?
Just to piggyback off of that, I think part of the result of that is a lack of self-confidence. I just see a lot of kids who don't have confidence to go out there and address a situation or a problem, and so they just sit back if they don't get it, you know, right away, or they are too scared to get it wrong, and just in the relationships with students, just a lack of self-confidence.
Yeah. Okay, so then to piggyback on that, what do you guys think for teachers? What are the biggest challenges you're facing as teachers in light of this changing culture?
I think for a lot of teachers, it's challenging to be able to meet the needs of all of the students, especially nowadays with all of the rigorous testing that is required of teachers and of students. It's just difficult to be able to appropriately and adequately. I know from a teacher's perspective, we just feel like we're not adequately meeting the needs of all of our kids just because there are so many different needs for each individual child.
Anybody else want to address that?
I think the needs are different as well. We're fulfilling roles that I don't think 25 years ago teachers were fulfilling. There's a lot of parenting happening in a classroom, a lot of basic life skills, a lot of basic communication skills, things that our parents, I think, kind of did for us. And I mean, I can still remember my mom editing papers and doing all of this with me and kind of doing the why did you make that word choice and all of that. And I think there's a pretty big disconnect now where the parents, and not all of them certainly, but there's a large population of the parents who are allowing us or sort of handing that challenge off to us as teachers. And it can be hard. It can be hard to meet those needs and fulfill those parenting needs and then hand the kid the test.
Yeah, and I would say with that, the demands on students have become more at a younger age. So like what students are expected to do in kindergarten, you know, when I talk to people, they're like, oh, it's a half day and you drink milk and you take a nap and you have two recesses. And I'm like, no, but that would be nice. And so, you know, it's a full day at kindergarten and they come in and they're expected to know these life skills, I'm sure, as, you know, Brittany can attest to, and they don't. So you need to couple that along with teaching kids the alphabet and teaching them to read and teaching them, you know, math that I remember doing in first or second grade. So all these things accompanied together can be difficult, yeah.
So then how do you guys as teachers, and to the teachers out here, how do you keep yourself built up inside and strong to deal with these hardships, and how do you deal with them when you're facing some of these challenges? I know there's a lot of different ones, but what are some of the ways you're keeping yourself strong?
I have realized I have to be super diligent about staying in the Word morning and night. Like, I stay rooted to some of those scriptures about, like, this is what I'm called to do. It is not going to be easy, but I am investing into something that is going to outlive my life, and I'm investing into eternal things. And no matter what was wiped on me, spit up on me, or whatever during the day. And it does happen. You know, I get home and after maybe some few, you know, there are tears because it is hard, but just remembering that it's all for His glory and that I get my strength from Him. I can't attest enough how important that is, because if it wasn't for that, I can honestly say I would not be a teacher. I would not be doing what I'm doing right now if it wasn't for my faith.
Yeah, that's awesome. Well, and you alluded to it. You said it's a calling. So how many of you guys up here feel that way? You feel that you're called to be a teacher. Can you talk about that a little bit? What does that describe that?
Thank you, sir. I remember being a kid, and people were always like, you should become a teacher. And I'm like, no. And they're like, you're going to be really good at it. I'm like, never. Never enough. It's never going to happen. And halfway through college, it just kind of fell on my lap. And it literally wasn't a job. It has been a calling. You were called to it. And I think that's what gives you strength throughout the day, is that, you know, this is something bigger than yourself. And there's a lot of other moving parts involved. And you take a lot of energy from that, too. A lot of prayer at the front of the day. I notice a difference when I've gotten busy and I didn't pray before my day begins. It goes wildly. But when you do, there's just a certain grace to get through whatever comes your way, and there's always something. So,
yeah, awesome. That's great.
So for me, it was a little bit different. I felt the call really early, long before I knew what the word call meant, before I was even saved. As an eighth grader, I saw this whole thing happening and instantly fell in love with this idiom of band. And then I thought I was going to go pro in hockey. I wasn't going to go pro in hockey. But I had made the decision to quit band, and I love telling this story to my kids when they quit, because then they don't quit. But I actually blew out my knee like within weeks, and I was like, oh, I get it. That wasn't the right call. Got it. And I ended up, you know, from there on. But even into my career, there's a dip, and younger teachers know what's coming, and older teachers help your younger teachers. But there's a dip in your career where suddenly you kind of wake up and you're like, is it worth it? You start having those very big questions. And then, you know, I had some temptation enter the scene, and I was in a really kind of dark place about teaching and was considering leaving education, going to the business sector where all the money was. And I woke up one day, and the Lord kind of hit me with it and said, absolutely not, that's not what you're here for. And ever since, the cool thing is I have so passionately fallen back in love with teaching that now, like, horrible days, I'm like, so? The Lord put me here, this is what I'm supposed to be doing. And it just brings this joy and this contagiousness to my day that other colleagues and peers and whatnot have even noticed, which then makes it easier to live out my faith in front of them because I'm like, well, the Lord told me to be here. That's him. It's all
that's
him.
That's so cool. That's a great anchor for you guys, isn't it? And when the waves are blowing and so on. Do you want to say something, Kitty?
Sure. I think from a very, very young age, I somehow always knew that I wanted to be a teacher. From even before the time I could go to school, I wanted to go to school. I was mad that I couldn't go to school when my brother went to school. He's older than I am. But I just always loved school from even a young age. I loved the way it looked. I loved the way books smelled. I loved the way the classrooms were set up. I loved the organization of it all. And so just from a very young age, I always loved school. And as I mentioned earlier, I taught in the public school system for 16 years. And just hearing Josh mention, you know, kind of get that dip in your teaching career where you really question, am I called to still do this? And I, you know, distinctly remember being in that season, and I had a really, really tough class that year. And I knew, the hard part for me was that I knew that the Lord was calling me out of the public school system. I just didn't know where he was calling me to. But that was like the middle of the school year, and I couldn't just up and quit. So I remember standing in my classroom, like almost in tears one day, and I was just like, Lord, I can't do this anymore. And he's like, you're going to do this, and it's going to be okay. So after I heard him say that, I'm like, okay, yeah, that's right. I am going to do this, but I can't do this without you. Not that I had tried doing it without him before, but I just knew that I knew that he was there with me, and I wasn't going to do it without him. He wasn't going to just leave me there, you know, by myself. And so made it through the rest of the year, and then like a couple years later, just being faithful and patient, he called me here, so.
That's awesome. Great, great testimony. Okay. Got something? Okay. I saw that.
Just, I'll do it real short. Like 2 years ago, you know, I've been volunteering in the church a lot and leading groups, and so I started questioning, okay, are you supposed to do something in ministry? And so I went through, you know, that moment, and God's just like, public school is your ministry. We need you as the light there. And so, you know, it's just, it was a, you know, turning point too for me.
It's awesome that you guys all resigned yourself to it. Like, you heard it. You went through the temptation to quit, but it's your anchor, which is awesome. Okay, let's change gears a little bit. How about your most embarrassing moment? Let's talk about funny, embarrassing moments. There's your meme for you, especially this time of the year. All right, who's got a funny story?
This one's pretty epic. You spend a lot of time as a band director trying to prep your kids to not forget anything for concerts, right? And to make sure they're fully prepared. We call it pack your own chute and do a lot of that stuff. Well, so it was my second year teaching. I had this huge pride issue because I had survived my first year teaching and everything went swimmingly and all of this. And so it's the end of my second year, and I lived about an hour from where I taught, and we had this concert. And it was our spring concert, and everything was great, and I had to pack all of my stuff first thing in the morning at 5:30 in the morning, like they were saying, and threw it in the car, and everything was great, and I get through the day, we get the chairs and everything set up, but because I'm doing all the setup, I have these dirt, you know, just junky jeans on and a, you know, polo, and so I'm not concert dressed for the day at all. Well, so 5 minutes to showtime, we've got about 500-600 people in the house of the auditorium, I've got 100 and some kids squared away, ready for going on, I'm like, cool, I'm going to sneak away, I'm going to get dressed, and I'm come back out, and everything will be great. Get to my dressing room and kind of start disassembling everything. There are no pans. None whatsoever. So I have this flash of, this is the end of my career. It's been a really wild 48 hours here, and we're done. And, of course, it would never scale to that. But so in your head, when you're in those emergency moments as a teacher, you don't think clearly. You just start problem solving with the worst possible answers. And so I immediately thought of this student who I knew lived across the street. And I was like, hey, Jesse, come here. I need you to run home, like sprint home and get some black pants of your brother's. I realized I knew she had an older brother that was about my age. And I was like, just run home, grab those. Without question, because kids are awesome and very loyal. She's like, cool, on it. Out she goes. Well, so she, thankfully, a leak in the roof happened. I mean, it was a tiny little leak, but I made a huge deal out of it that we couldn't start the concert until the leak was fixed. So, right? So she comes running back in just proud as proud could be that she had these pants. And I take them back. I'm like, I am the smartest guy ever. I fixed these problems. I forgot she had a younger brother, and I didn't explain the situation, so she wasn't aware of what was going on. And I'm like, well, here we go. This is 8 inches too small, of course. And so I go running out, and my piano player was about my size. He was a big football player kid, piano player in my jazz band, and I just whisper into his ear, so I'm like, Jordan, I need your belt. And again, the loyalty, he's like, okay, and stands up, and I'm like, not on stage. Come on, buddy. So he gives me his belt. I go back in, and I am able to close these pants that are 8 inches too small for me with this belt. While doing so, my principal walks in to make sure I'm okay because this concert's now 20 minutes delayed. And I'm, like, wrenching the belt shut with my, you know. So all of this goes down. And my beautiful bride sees me after the concert. No one says a word. I'm a big mover. Obviously, I'm talking with my hands here. And I am not moving at all. I'm like starting the jazz band. I'm like, and go. Not moving at all. So she finds me afterwards. And the only thing she says to me is she's like, honey, I don't know whose pants those are, but those look great on you.
So the moral of the story is you need to get some skinny jeans. Apparently.
Absolutely. I started the trend back up.
That's a funny. Who else has got one? I know you can't top it maybe, but what do you got?
Yeah, I should have gone first. No, I would just say anytime I'm out in public and I don't hear, you know, I don't hear Kelsey, I hear Miss Putman, I like freeze, right? Like with all teachers, I think that's true. Like you hear your last name, you're like, where am I at? What am I wearing? Well, at the end of the school year last year, it was about a week we were out of school and I was going into Babies R Us to get a present. Well, here I am in Babies R Us, and I hear Miss Putman, and I'm like, oh, this is going to be interesting. So it's like, you know, super exaggerated, you know, kindergarten. It's like, Miss Putman! And then all of a sudden, I turn around, and my student sees me, and then she realizes where she's at, and she's like, Miss Putman? And she comes up and, like, grabs my stomach. I'm like, oh, no. Like, Miss Putman is just here for a gift. She's like, I can't wait. And I'm like, no, listen. Nope, Miss Putman is here for a gift. She's like, I'm so excited. I'm like, this is a lost cause. I'm just going to. I'll see you next year. Great. So that's not as good, but, you know.
That's a good one. Anybody else?
So I was about 34 at the time, and I had a bunch of my eighth grade boys that I coached in cross country and track and basketball. So I was with them all the time, before school, after school, everything. And one day in the spring, we're teaching about the Civil War, and it's fifth hour, and they ask a question. The hand goes up. I'm like, yeah, what is it? They go, and I'm expecting a question about the Battle of Antietam or something, you know, really cool. Instead, they go, when are you going to get married? And I'm like, when you do your homework, how about that, you know? You know, they're like, no, seriously, coach, we're a little worried about you. You're getting up there and running out of time. I'm like, well, guys, I am with you literally before school, after school with sports. The lady would have to walk into my classroom for me to actually meet someone. I mean, like, that's just what it is. They spent the rest of the year, anytime there was a young lady who was substitute teaching coming in, they'd say, hey, there's a really cute sub. You want us to bring her down to your room? And they would say, like, oh, no. Well, maybe. I don't know. But as a follow-up, when I moved to the high school a couple years later, the very first person to ever walk into my classroom was Becky Zoppy Moon. So she really did walk into my class. And you name it, you claim it, you know.
Awesome. What are some of your most memorable moments with students? Now, you've talked a little bit about some funny stories, but you got any? Okay, you guys got to see this meme. Who says teaching is stressful? I'm 39 and I feel great. the most memorable stories, but some of the touching stories maybe. Have you had students come back and say, oh man, I really appreciate what you did? I mean, what have you heard?
So I think one of the most memorable stories for me, it was pretty early when I started teaching at Portage. I had a young man, and I think a couple of us have, named Connor Sorensen. And Connor, when I first met Connor as a freshman, he was interested in his parents shared with me that he had a degenerative lung disease, that he wasn't physically capable of doing a lot of things. He had a CPAP machine with him all the time, and just a really neat kid, really outgoing, but in marching band, it's a pretty physical activity, and his dream was to march out in the field, and I kind of had that real talk with him to say, buddy, that's just not safe. It's a really physical, rigorous activity, and he talked and talked and talked with me about getting out in the field, but we made a compromise that he'd be in the front ensemble, the group that doesn't move kind of along the front sideline. But into October, it gets pretty cold, and Connor would turn blue, and we're in a competitive circuit that doesn't allow certain things, and Connor would just be just as blue could be until he could get off, and we had an electric blanket worked out for him that as soon as we were off the field, we'd wrap him up and get him warm back up. Well, flash forward around his junior year, it's about mid-March, and it's 10:30, quarter to 11 at night, and I'm kind of finishing some stuff up and getting ready for the next day. And my phone rings, and I see that it's his parents. And I was like, well, shoot, I hope everything's okay. And I hear Connor's voice on the other end of the phone. And he's like, Mr. Bartz, guess what? And I'm like, buddy, it's 11 o'clock at night. What am I guessing? Just cut to the chase here, friend. And he's like, Mr. Bartz, I'm on the way to the University of Michigan. I have a donor. I'm getting a double lung transplant tonight. And I was like, buddy, that's awesome. And that could have been it right there. And I mean, I'm welling up just thinking about it. And the follow-up was, Mr. Bartz, I'm going to be able to march in the fall. Wow. I'm sorry, what? Buddy, you're about to have a double lung transplant. Let's focus on that first. And he did. Lo and behold, he went and had the double lung transplant, did a full year of physical therapy and working and working and working. And his senior year, he got to march saxophone out on the football field. And I swear to you, I've never prayed more in my life. Because I was so terrified of putting this kid out on the field, but his parents worked with me at every step of the way, and he marched and ended up having an amazing, amazing season. So at the end of the year, he was an IB student at our school, which is sort of an honorary system, and he was able to honor one teacher, and he chose me. And I was like, Connor, I don't think I deserve this because, buddy, you have taught me way more about hard work. Tony alluded to it earlier, about getting through mountains, getting through obstacles. Dude, you're the real deal. Like, every day that I think I had a bad day, I have that plaque from that honor that hangs right over my door so nobody else sees it. But every single day when I walk out of my office, that's the last thing I see before I go talk to kids, because if he can get through that stuff, man, these kids can get through anything. So that was my buddy.
Awesome. That is amazing.
I can't top that. But the opening song kind of reminded me of one. You know, just going through the day sometimes and you feel like you're not making any difference and you go home crying because it's like, oh my gosh, you know, these kids think I'm an idiot or I just messed up that lesson or they're not listening to anything I'm saying. And then, you know, early on in my teaching, I just had a great group of girls and it was after they got to college, I got a letter from one of them that just said some awesome things like that I never knew, you know, things I never talked to them about, but some of the things like, you know, you taught us, you and Mr. Moon even taught us how to, you know, have fun and be a Christian. And like, we never talked about that, you know. And just you helped us overcome obstacles, you know, and just said all these great things that, you know, you're always questioning. And so it's always wonderful to get those cards.
Yeah, that's so cool. Awesome. Okay, so what advice would you guys give to parents these days? If you could, and you could be somewhat honest and not hurt feelings and help them. The parent says, well, he never does that at home. And this is the teacher's face. So you guys have been in teacher-parent conferences. You've dealt with a lot of parent-student issues. If you could encourage parents and give them some good advice, what would you say?
Someone asked me that question before, and the best answer I could think of was to just be there. For parents to literally be there, present with your kids physically, emotionally, being with them after school. I was thinking about growing up in my life, and I can't remember, you know, being unattended to or not knowing where my parents were or not having anybody at home to help me with my homework. And for a lot of kids, that's their reality. And sometimes it's out of parents' control. You know, they're doing the best that they can. But as much as you can be there for your kids, be there for them. Read to them at night. That's the pre-K in me. Read to your kids, you know, at nighttime and make sure they're getting, you know, that interaction with you, but just being there is important.
That's great. What else?
I would say, working with older students, they get really caught up sometimes in what is their grade, what is their letter, what's their percentage. And always try to tell them, and I would love it if parents would reinforce this too, is that what's more valuable than do you have a letter, do you have an 89.3% or 94.2, is what did you learn? What did you really get out of that? What did that mean to you? And to spend some time learning that you can enjoy what you're learning too. And it doesn't have to always be one more hoop to jump through to get another letter, to get another number. But it really is about what did you learn and why did you learn that and why do you think it fits with something else? And to kind of appreciate an education more than just getting through school.
That's good. That's a great word. Appreciate the education and enjoy it. Great. What else? Anything else you guys would tell parents?
Yeah. I would say also to what Brittany said, teaching younger students, it's important for them to feel supported and have that support at home. But also on the flip side, to even at 5 and 6 years old, like raising that bar of expectation for your students because they can achieve it and they can reach it. So giving them an opportunity to solve their own problems, or if there is an issue, making sure you're talking to them about, okay, well, how do you think you could solve this with my support rather than trying to solve it for them. That's a lot that I'm seeing nowadays is that best intentions for sure, but parents trying to solve problems of their students and then, they're not able to solve the next problem. So really giving those opportunities as a learning and a teaching and how to be more independent.
Great.
And kind of piggybacking along with that, even though you're at the earliest, youngest, I'm at the oldest and kind of on the way to college. Parents, be okay having tough conversations with your kids that don't revolve around the fix of the problem. Allowing them to sort of marinate in the natural consequence of the choice that they made. Again, we as teachers feel like sometimes the get out of jail free cards are the 90% of the deck, not the 10%. And we would love to see the other, because sometimes there's more learning in the failure than there is in the helped success.
That's good. The get out of jail free card. You want to see 10% of the time they get that, but 90% they learn from the consequences. That's a good way to put it. Great. Okay. What about social media? Can we talk about that? Because you mentioned it, but with the students these days and then with the teachers, and are they allowed to have phones in the classrooms? Are the kids allowed to be on their phones in classrooms?
In high school, yes.
Really?
Yeah.
So that's, like, impossible.
Completely.
So what would you say to students and to parents, just about the whole social media world? It's not going away. So how does that, what can we do?
I like to put it under the phrase of balance and boundaries. You know, there's just so much out there, and it's in your face all the time. And for parents, like, we've got to educate ourselves. It's changing all the time. And it's not just like go home and smash the kid's phone, because, you know, we're using them. So, you know, modeling, we have to model healthy social media and phone use. And just teaching our kids, you know, when they see something that feels wrong or inappropriate, to set it down, tell someone. You've got to guard the doors of your internet big time. We've just been doing a bunch of stuff in Portage right now with all of this, and like, I'll just put a plug, Protect Young Eyes, Common Sense Media. Like, go to those places, read up, research. I'm sorry to say this, but don't just trust your kids that they're telling you the truth about what's on their phone. Yeah. You've really gotta, you've gotta keep an eye on it. Middle school kids will survive without social media. And so just, you know, get with your village, get with your group of parents, and, you know, everybody's asking what age should I get social media, but it's really like know your kid. If you have a curious kid who likes to, you know, push the boundaries, then they're going to do that. And, you know, there's a lot out there that's easy to get to quickly. So yeah. I could say a lot about
it.
No,
it's great though. And you would know because you're a school counselor, you deal with a lot of these repercussions, I'm guessing.
Yeah, we do. And our counseling group got together recently and brainstormed what are the biggest barriers to kids learning, and social media and smartphone use was number one. It's just distracting, and, you know, in a world of comparison, like the FOMO thing, you know, kids are just, you know, when we were growing up, we could go to a friend's house. We don't know what the whole neighborhood's doing. Now you always know what everybody's doing, and so it's a challenge.
No, it is, definitely. Okay, so let's talk about the balance. You guys mentioned it, have alluded to it. Your faith has played a big role and your calling, and how are you modeling your Christian faith, and how does your Christian faith come into play in a public school setting? Oh, yeah, you got to look at this one. Okay. The look teachers give at the end of the year when a parent asks if her child can get extra credit to make up the work he didn't do all year. So what do you guys do as Christians in a public school? Just talk about that a little bit. How do you navigate that dynamic?
I think as a few people already said, it's staying built up in your faith, making sure that you're spending time in the Word whenever you can, as often as you can, as consistently as you can. And then really just walking the walk and talking the talk. Your actions will speak louder than your words, how you handle yourself, how you respond to students in situations, your conversations with parents, it all speaks volumes. And I've had, over the course of my years in teaching, other staff members or parents come up to me and actually ask me, are you a Christian? Or I think that you might be a Christian just because of maybe some things that they've heard or something that they've seen, and then that opens doors to other conversations as well.
That's cool. That's great. Anybody else?
I would say praying for my students. That's been huge. Praying over them, praying for connections, praying for relationships. That's been a big thing, is that you can go in and you can do the work, but the true change with students is through relationships. There is nothing comparable. So I think just always making sure that I try my best, but I do fail. I'll just tell you that. But I try my best to be led by the Holy Spirit on what do I need to speak to the student? What do I need to say? What do I maybe need to let go? That is my big one. I need to work on that, is maybe I need to give more grace here and let this go. So that's just a constant building of relationships, because each of my children are different and I need to handle them differently and different situations. And so that's really what I always try to do, because when I think about it, sometimes if I'm not being led by the Spirit and I haven't been in the Word, then my flesh is taking over, and my students deserve better than that, if that makes sense. So they deserve better what I can do on my own. So
that's great. That's really great.
So
Go ahead.
Sorry,
yeah. Go ahead.
For me, both of those are exactly in line, but the other thing is the give me your eyes, Lord, to see the kids. In our band program, we have a process that I teach my leadership team called See the 10. So when the kids are coming in, they're showing me their 2 self, and I need to see their 10 self. I need to see the kid behind the kid, the one that doesn't have the walls up, the barriers, the language, the one cussing me out, the one whatever. I have to see, no matter what the situation is, I have to see the 10 version of that kid that maybe the parents aren't even aware is there, and things like that. And that helps me teach that kid the way they need to be taught, because the 2 they're showing me isn't their self. That's not the real kid. That's the one that society's kind of beat up on a little bit. The 10 is the kid that can succeed and get through the things and get across the finish line into the world.
Awesome. That's great, Josh. Good stuff. Speaking into their destiny. Okay, as a church, what can we do as a church? Of course, we can pray, and we're going to ask you if, like, specifically, how can we pray? There you go. What can we do as a church to support teachers? And then specifically, in what ways can we pray? But just so you guys know, many of the VFCers, you guys do know this, for the last month or so, we have been collecting all kinds of school supplies, because we know that a lot of times when school starts, teachers have to purchase out of their own pocket the supplies to put into their classrooms. The Kleenex, and there's a variety of things. We'll put the list up. All the stuff on that list we've been collecting for the last month, because we want to give several of the schools in the area a gift of just a bunch of school supplies ahead of time. So Pastor Richard's working with different ones to select schools in our area that will be getting a nice big delivery of a lot of school supplies to help some teachers out. So VFCers, way to go. Awesome job, because you have definitely contributed. And those of you that are in the schools that receive all the goodies, we hope you appreciate getting them, and just it's a blessing to you and saves you from having to go get stuff. So that's one way as a church we can support schools. It's just by helping with some of those natural things. But when it comes to prayer and just in general, as a church and a community, we have a lot of school systems in our whole county and beyond. How do we help you?
Well, I think probably the best way is just pray. Pray for safety. Pray for favor and blessing over your school and the students there and the teachers and the staff. That covers a lot of stuff. You know? And it empowers us when we know people are doing that too.
Yeah, that's good.
I would say invite. Like invite, encourage your kids to invite kids that they know. It's so cool, so cool. I can't even tell you how cool it is when I see students that I had or students that I have currently that are in church and just being able to make that connection. And then I go back into the classroom or I go back into school and I can make that connection with them. And being like, hey, it was so awesome to see you at church this weekend. It just adds a whole nother dynamic. So I would just say invite.
I was going to say pray for families, families that have young kids, older kids, just that they would have a wholeness and just some sort of consistency at home so that when they come to school that we can teach them and give them what they need. But they need to get what they need at home first. And so just pray that families would come together and be restored.
Yeah, that's great. I think the panel did a great job. What do you guys think? Awesome, awesome.